Might also get a small beer.
Medium.
Yeah, maybe medium, right?
Yeah, medium is...
That's good. We got to send us.
There you go.
All right.
Welcome.
Cheers.
Back.
Hey, thank you, brother. Happy breakfast. I could have flown like through Singapore or Hong Kong or something. Then I found this flight on ANA and I'm like, of course.
Of course.
Because something good is going to happen to me if I touch down in Tokyo.
Yeah.
You know, like Shinji, make something good happen.
Shinji Nohara has been making good things happen for visitors to Tokyo for almost two decades, ever since a lanky, camera-shy writer and chef named Anthony Bourdain arrived with Lydia Tenaglia and Chris Collins to shoot their first television episode ever. Shinji was the fixer for that episode. First, he found out what Tony's food kinks were, and then he delivered those deepest desires in one single sizzling experience that, by Tony's own admission, changed his life. That is Shinji's job, and nobody does it better than him. So, of course, on a layover from Bangkok earlier this month, I asked Shinji to jerry-rig 2 hours of wish fulfillment for me. In this case, it was a layup for the man. A bowl of Setagaya ramen, an extremely cold and fresh beer, and a deep conversation with Shinji in Haneda Airport's new terminal is, to be totally honest, my dream breakfast. This is Nathan Thornburg, and you're listening to The Trip, drinking with exceptional people around the world.
Live from Haneda Airport.
International Terminal.
International Terminal. Shinji, you just got me a coffee.
Yep.
I mean, this is sort of cheating because we just had a beer.
Well,
but we were eating ramen, so
fasting in the morning.
And now we've switched to Itoen coffee.
It's we need the caffeine.
It's not a matcha latte. It's just a regular black coffee. I think your Instagram handle, all of your social media handles, is says Tokyo Fixer.
Right.
So what is a day in the life of a Tokyo Fixer? I mean, of the quintessential Tokyo Fixer.
The name came because the fixer, they said, you know, fixing the location, making appointment, get the permission, and those kind of things they call a fixer. And I know it has a shady image, but I like that. You know, someone suggested me, like, you should call yourself Tokyo Fixer, and I like that. You know,
that is true. I mean, there is the, like, Quentin Tarantino style fixer, like Mr. Wolf or something, is going to come in and help you chop a body up. The journalists, you know, have a more established, like slightly less adventurous version of a fixer, which is just somebody who has local contacts and so on. You're kind of in between the two.
You're a journalistic
fixer.
Somebody misinterpreted, you know, like, Shinji, can we meet a Japanese Yakuza?
That's not your job. So what happens now for Tokyo Fixer?
Yeah. So when I, you know, first, you know, started, you know, like mostly like a TV crew or magazine or journalists. And I don't think Japanese tourism now is like booming. Of course, like sushi or sashimi or, you know, some people knew sukiyaki or something.
This is the early 2000s, right?
Yes, that was the early 2000s. And people coming, but it was not like mainstream. You know, usually, you know, like people like getting Japanese food, like what's next?
Right.
And like we are talking about ramen in New York. Came in sometime 2000s, right?
Yeah, like my personal ramen obsession, Ippudo. Which we used to eat all the time here in Tokyo in 2003. Yeah. It must have been like 2005 or
five,
something.
Five or six, right?
Something like that,
In the mid.
That Ippudo first opened up in New York.
So that was the time people were like, you know, what's next?
Yeah.
After sushi.
After sushi, which had had like a 15-year run. Basically knocked everything else off the table, right? So people just thought Japanese food was sushi.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, like oh, there's a yakitori. And now there's a couple of yakitori joints opening up. And people asking me, like, where is the best izakaya in Tokyo?
You know? The first time you heard that question, right?
Yeah.
Before they hadn't really cared or known to ask, even.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yeah. All right.
So, like, you know, in Tokyo, there are many possibilities.
It's a city with 30,000 restaurants.
And restaurants.
More Michelin stars than any other city on earth.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just come here and say, oh, I got to hit these five spots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And usually, like, a Japanese restaurant, I mean, now it's different, but usually they have everything in the U.S. or maybe everywhere outside of Japan. But now a big city like New York or L.A., more specialized, you know, we are just doing ramen, we're just doing, you know, sushi.
Right.
Or, you know, whatever. And that's about, you know, Japanese restaurant in general here. You know, like, we're only doing chicken. We are only doing pork.
Right.
You know, tonkatsu. They could probably do, you know, maybe do chicken too. Or maybe beef too.
It's also protein, but they don't, right?
They don't. You know, like, we're just doing pork.
That's their job.
Yeah, that's their job. Like, you know.
So that, so there's that level of specialization makes it even more confusing for people.
Yeah. And tempura.
Yeah.
So we're only doing seafood and veggies. Why?
Like, you could deep fry some other shit while you're at it.
Yeah.
You've got the batter, you've got the oil.
Or maybe you can do the best fried chicken.
Yeah, right. But
you
but there's that devotion, that single track thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's, so people started to need
help. More help, exactly.
Navigating.
Yeah. Navigation.
So you were doing film and television, obviously. You started with Tony, which is...
Yeah.
Was that your first film and TV gig, or...?
Yes. Actually, I did have a friend from Paris.
Uh-huh.
He was doing documentary about a French writer. He came to Japan 1950s.
So you'd help with the documentary?
Yes.
Ah, got it.
And but, you know, like, I don't think this kind of, you know, thing's happening, you know, all the time.
Right.
At that time, I was writing about restaurant in Tokyo.
Okay, you were a writer. Yeah. That's how you got into it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So that's my former career.
Yeah.
Writing about restaurants.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why Tony needed, you know, advice.
And a beautiful marriage was born. It is pretty crazy that your first kind of TV experience would be with him.
Yeah.
But also an incredibly different guy back then in the early, you know, 2000s.
He wrote Kitchen Confidential.
Yeah.
And that was his first show, Cook's Tour. I think, if my memory is correct, he has chosen Tokyo as the first destination of his show.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure the order they, you know, broadcasted.
Oh, yeah. He always came back to Japan.
Yeah.
And we had, you know, our book that we wrote with him, the first one was Of Japan, that Matt wrote, and that was that was because we knew he was a total Japan addict, you know.
Right.
Like, he was just going to be ready for anything we were going to throw at him that was that was deep and good from this country.
Yeah.
So then you started doing more TV.
Yeah. And some people, like, saw the show and, hey, Shinji, can you take us around like you did for him? And like... you know, that was my side job.
Right.
Actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And my magazine business going down.
Like any good magazine business around the world.
Yeah.
It's all a giant trash fire. So. Uh-huh.
And I never thought my side business is getting busier.
Right.
Yeah. But actually, you know, went that way.
And so
we've
come to the point now where... You are, you know, and have been for a long time, the go-to guy. And there's only one of you.
Yeah.
And there's 30,000 restaurants.
Right.
So it's a very, like, elite level, like, food fixing. Because you can find somebody else if you're here and you're just like, I'd like to get some sushi into, you know.
Yeah.
Like, but if you want to dive deep, like, Shinji's the guy. So it's a combination of just, like, stupid rich people. I mean, not, maybe they're stupid or not. They're stupidly rich. Also chefs, right? People chef, who like yep. really dive deep.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Who? What other kind of people come in?
Like, you know, lots of chefs or journalists.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Coming in, you know, like they need, you know, which one is the best. Because that was before, you know, Michelin guidebook came.
That's right. Michelin was fairly new to Japan.
2008, if my memory is correct.
Right.
You know. So that was before. And like again, like so many restaurants, you have no idea where, you know, where to start.
Right. And when Michelin arrived yeah. from yeah. Paris, they yeah. had suitcases filled with stars.
Yeah.
And they just started like throwing yeah. them Swearing at all them. These restaurants. But yeah. you had already known they were mm-hmm. really fucking great restaurants.
Yeah.
But it took somebody to know, yeah. you know, someone yeah. Japanese who yeah. clued in.
Yeah. Before that, like maybe only Lonely Planet, you know. So that was, yeah. Beginning early 2000 to mid 2000.
Yeah.
You know, people had no clue, no idea, you know, where to go, where to start.
So you're yeah. slowly growing this, and, yeah. and for you, then what, I don't know, what happens on a day now? Somebody yeah. calls you up, whether it's a chef or a journalist.
Yeah. And, well, the first of all, like, I have questions.
You know, like, I need to get to know this person a little bit. Well, it's true, right?
Yeah.
Because this is a city that, you know, can yeah. give any desire can mm-hmm. be fulfilled. Mm-hmm. You just got to figure out what the hell that desire
yeah.
is, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, most of the cases they said, oh, I leave you everything in your hands.
Yeah.
And like I said, I usually play by ear. These days, situation is getting changed because many places you have to book in advance. Some famous places you have to book in like maybe 2 months, 3 months. Some unbelievable restaurants like a year, which is, you know, I don't believe it, but yeah.
they're yeah. Sort of
yeah.
fake full.
yeah, yeah, fake full. Like we are full until 2020 or something.
Right.
What?
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
Then they'll give yeah. you the secret code on the on
yeah.
the slide.
yeah.
So right. So the yeah. serendipity that you used yeah. to be able to run with and just mm-hmm. say like,
yeah. Yeah.
we'll figure this out.
Yeah. Like, what's in the mood? Like, are you in the mood for ramen?
Yeah.
Are you in the mood for fish?
Yeah.
Or beef?
Right.
Or again, the millions of questions, you know, like options, like sorting out, you know.
You got a big ass yes. funnel, and yeah. you're just gonna like yeah. get it down till you yeah. got that one.
Yeah,
they need to go to this kind of izakaya.
Yeah, so like if the restaurant has, you know, hundreds of choices, like, okay, we always start from here, but everyone's different.
Right,
you know.
I mean, some of the stuff you're talking about, how it changes, it's changed, yeah. and you have to like book out yeah. more in advance.
Yeah.
We've been seeing this too in Japan. Yeah. It's just like yeah. every year, you know,
yeah.
more visited,
uh-huh.
like having more success telling the story. I still personally, like what I think I know about Japan, there yeah. should be even more of a metric fuck ton of gaijin walking around because Japan's amazing.
Yeah.
So it still doesn't get nearly as much as Western Europe or something. Yeah. But still, there's a lot more people.
Yeah.
Has that changed? I mean, has that put pressure on the restaurants or on the food scene here?
Yeah. So like lots of restaurants, they start, you know, using a website.
Uh-huh.
You know, like a booking system.
Got it.
Yeah. So it's good for them, but also for me is like, you know, I'm not criticizing, but for example, like ramen is not the thing like, oh, I want to book ramen.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's not happening yet, though.
But
for
it
instance,
will.
Yeah. Like yakitori, like skewer chicken.
Yeah.
Like it's not the food like, oh, I want to eat yakitori like 2 weeks from now on this day. No.
No. No. Yakitori is yeah. you're sitting at a bar,
yeah.
you've been drinking,
yeah. Yeah.
and you're thinking, you know what would be yeah. really fucking great yeah. right now?
Yeah.
Like an amazing yakitori. And then you go yeah. and hit it.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like scheduling sex.
Yes.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
Booking it online.
Yeah,
you know,
online.
I guess yeah. there are probably guys who do that.
Yeah. It's not fun, you know,
that's not
yeah.
what we're looking for.
So like, yeah, I think any food is supposed to be like, hey, like, honey, we're in the mood for today, right? You know, something like, you want to do with a foreplay? Like, I'm sorry.
There you go, right. Like, the analogy goes.
It's not like, again, you said, like scheduling.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Like, it's just like the moment's here. Let's take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Right. So.
That's what I'm.
That's part of the pressure that all the visitation is coming and bringing.
Yeah.
In terms of the food itself, I mean, Japanese food, I don't know how you rank these things, but it's certainly jostling up there for, like, the most mentioned as, like, the number one cuisine on earth. I don't know who the hell is talking about it that way, but, like, there is that thing that it's taken over what the Spanish took from the French, and now, you know, certainly in the culinary world, everybody's here, and they want... They want to get inside, you know, Tatsurai's soba, you know, shop. And it's like, you know, it does strike me as a very delicate thing that's also not really made for foreigners. I mean, so much of Japanese cuisine is like, you're not really invited to this party, which makes you as useful as always. But I can imagine that that could upset some restaurateurs or upset even some styles of cuisine. If you're having a lot of people like me who, you know, however much I love and respect Japan, I'm still like a bear in a China shop. You know, like, I don't know how to control my body. I don't know how to shut my mouth at the right time, you know. And these are very fine, in some cases, very fine styles of eating and cooking that are not made better by having an American there.
You know, attention to details is a thing, right? Especially the Japanese things, let's say even sushi.
Yeah.
Like some sushi places, they're blending rice from different regions.
Yep.
And sometimes different vintage, different year. Like, what are you talking about? Vintage of rice. Yeah.
That's intense.
That's very intense, right?
Yeah.
Even like the Japanese, like, you know, listening to a story like that, like, that's crazy, you know? And most of the, like, you know, people talking about sushi is like, fish is so fresh.
Yeah, right.
Okay, you know, fresh is important. But more importantly, those chefs are talking about rice. You
right.
know, like how much steam, how much seasoning, how much salt or vinegar or some, maybe secret something.
How do you stay on top of that stuff? Like, I mean, just knowing... Knowing that these cooks are so deep and that there's so much to know about each one of these kinds of things, like, you have to be a generalist. But you also have to, like, try to absorb as much information and have these, like, little secrets about regional styles. Do you keep a little book?
Nope. But you said generalist is, I like that because, again, I want to try everything.
Right.
And I just don't want to specialize. I'm a running guy. I'm a sushi guy. No. I want to eat everything. I want to try everything.
But that's a type here in Japan, like the ramen blogger archetype, you know, otaku. Like, is super intense. And these guys who are three bowls of ramen
or even like five bowls. You know, like, how that is possible? You know.
I remember Matt Goulding was with one of those guys in Fukuoka. I've never seen anybody eat Matt under the table. And Matt said the guy was just finishing all of his food for him because Matt, he couldn't do it. There's only so much a stomach can take. I mean, he must have been some special kind of ruminant with four stomachs, or, you know. So you're content to, like, dabble in a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps you be flexible in the moment, too, right? Yep. One thing shut down, let's see what the other taste is.
The other one, yeah.
Do you work outside of Tokyo?
Yeah. Niseko and Sapporo.
Okay.
You know, even, like, each time I, you know, find discoveries, you know. I mean, Japan is the endless, you know.
Yeah, endless. That's exactly
There's
right.
A guy, you know, if I, you know, talking about one discovery of Sapporo, 7 seats only, and this guy just serving gyoza.
Oh, man. Oh, can we go there now? I want to go there.
Amazing.
Right now.
You know, so you place, I want to eat pan fried, you know, and boiled gyoza, which is called sweet gyoza. And after you place the order, this guy, he takes the filling, and he take out, you know, some almost like, you know, dumpling dough. and he making the gyoza dumpling
right in front of you.
Right in front of us.
That's insane.
Insane.
That never happened.
I know. Even in Tokyo, like, I don't know any places, I know, like, after you place the order.
Right.
You pack, you know, the gyoza.
I mean, yeah. Each in my, one of them. Yeah. Yeah. In my mind, I'm yeah. seeing, like, the hand work.
Yeah.
Like, you uh-huh. know, the hand motion of these yeah. guys uh-huh. who've been doing one thing for so long is so intense, yeah. so fine, uh-huh. so quick, you yeah. know, where it's just like, yeah. I don't know. I can picture it now.
I know. It's quick, but he's still like rolling, you know, like a gyoza dough.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like hand working. So like, let's say like one serving is 6 gyoza each.
Yeah.
And we are like 3 of us and we place like 5 times 6, so 30 gyoza. He start, you know, making, you know, like.
Good Lord.
I know.
Well, I think maybe yeah. 7 seats is too many.
Yeah, I know. I know. I think 7 seats, that's a little bit too much, you know.
So how did you find, is it like word of mouth, the place like
Word of mouth, yeah. yeah.
That's the way to get the stuff.
Yeah.
So what's next for Japan's like culinary? Is it just going to keep mounting and mounting, more and more people coming?
So like right now, people ask me about izakaya.
Okay, that like izakaya is the thing.
Izakaya is the thing, yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. I would co-sign that for sure.
Right.
So you izakayas know? Are like Japanese pubs.
Yeah. Pubs, like a tapas bar. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. Because they've got that great nama beer that we just had for uh-huh. breakfast at 7 uh-huh. in the morning, yeah. which is like a tall, cold, super refreshing, crisp, yeah. light Japanese lager. Uh-huh. Yeah. And then they've got all the drinking foods.
Yep.
They got your gyozas, probably not made by hand.
No.
You know, skewers, uh-huh. meat, soups. And it's also really one of the, you were talking about specialization. Izakaya yes. is one of the few places where you can go and get a little bit of everything.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, they usually have, all kinds of meat, fish, yeah. veggies, and some other specialties. Yeah. But you have to be careful because there are so many franchise and corporation izakayas.
Yeah.
I always choose small individual restaurants. What's the point? Like you go izakaya, McDonald's. You know.
Shit, I would. Yeah. I might actually hit that. McDonald's izakaya.
24 yeah. hours open.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds a little tempting. But yeah.
Right. So you want to find the right kind.
Right kind.
And they all and they have a lot of flavor, individual flavor about yeah, the style of place.
Right. Specialties. One izakaya, he does a homemade udon noodles.
Oh shit! Okay.
Yeah, and that's more you know specialty. You have to you know wrap up the meal with house-made udon.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, you say have to like it's a tough duty, a hardship posting. Mm. That sounds okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I would accept that commandment.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of spot you're looking for.
And the other izakaya I like is like you can choose each portion. Like, okay, I want to eat tuna sashimi, 3 pieces each of us.
Okay.
And we want to get fried chicken, 2 pieces each. And if you like it,
right.
I want to get another 2 pieces.
You can keep that serendipity, follow your gut a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that, I mean, shit, even this morning, you know, I get through customs, we had no plan, but...
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, this is what you do at a very high level, and you found us here at Haneda Airport, a Setagaya ramen shop, and we had a bitchin' bowl of ramen with a little extra umami sauce. It's called punch in the face.
Punch in the face umami sauce.
So we just like spike the ramen with that, get a couple cold beers, and breakfast is going, and I'm just like... giggling with joy and then remembering well this is what you do, this is who you are. It does strike me that you might have in your work process some of the same problems or I guess that ethical question that Tony sometimes had, which is like you guys both love the undiscovered and the out of the way and the small, and yet both of you are in the business, he was in the business certainly on a mass scale, but of just like of blowing those spots up, of like bringing people into those spots. So like, how do you balance this 7-seater? Mm-hmm. Like, do you worry if you start bringing people there that like, I mean, the guy's got, he can only make so many goddamn gyoza, you know,
no.
in a day.
Well, I mean, if his place is in Tokyo, I want to keep it secret.
Okay.
Yeah. But to Sapporo,
Right, because it takes that that extra sex to get people to, on the plane or the train to get up there. Okay.
And it's such a small place to find.
You know? Yeah, but if it was here, it would be in your little black book of like, this is my Shinji spot.
Yeah.
Like, you know. Got it. Now, you know, one of the kinds of adventurer, and I was sort of mentioning this before, but like, that's popped up are these, this is an incredible word that they use on themselves, I guess, the gastronaut, you know, the people who fly all over the world to eat the very best. Do you ever come into contact with that crowd? The gastronaut crowd?
Yes.
Yeah. So tell me what that's like. What, like?
Well, again, there are a few restaurants in Tokyo, like on the list, and they are like, you know, how can I say in English, like a, you know, trophy. You know, you get the trophy from one place,
right?
Like a trophy collector or something.
But that's it's like for them, they want to be able to say, because I believe they run into each other occasionally to brag about where they've eaten. So you're helping them achieve kind of bragging rights in some level.
So for me, it's not my type of, you know, people.
Yeah, you don't fly all over the world to eat at the 4 Michelin star.
I mean, you know, I'm interested. You're like, maybe I should try once.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
If I go to New York, like I tried, you know, some of the, you know, famous ones. But I'd rather do like, oh, I want to eat the best burgers in New York.
Right. Right.
You know.
You're a high low kind of guy. You can go either way. That's true.
Yeah.
But you do have a service to the gastronaut crowd, so you will you will fuck with that crowd if they come into town, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's more fun, like, you know, let's try this hole in the wall shop,
right?
Just for snack or something.
And just, you know, the one of the things that I've heard about you is just that, you know, it's that thing that some people have, which is that eye to just like look at a shop immediately, look at the storefront, maybe something of the smell, the the way the cook looks when he's taking a smoke break out front or whatever. Yeah. It's a gut thing. It's an instinct. It's a real gift because I sometimes don't have it, and I'm like, oh, that place looks good, and then you're like, oh no.
You have to make hundreds of thousands of mistakes. And then you...
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I'm on my way.
On your ways. Yeah. Yeah, walk on it.
You know, for those of us who are not gastronauts, you know, say for the first-time visitor to Tokyo, what's like the Tokyo fixer? Just a couple little things that they should just keep in mind when they're trying to plan eating in this town.
Well, like, definitely open your mind. You know, like, try, you know, whatever you think. If it's like you know, diet restrictions or allergies, it can be helped. You know?
right.
But, well...
They don't have to open their mind to shrimp if it's going to send them to the hospital.
Yeah. Even like not serious, you know, gluten-free problems, maybe on this trip you can open up.
Just try.
You
know?
Yeah, just try.
And plus, for you gluten or lactose intolerant people, the toilets in Japan are fantastic. They'll take care of your butthole.
Take care of it.
So nice.
So nicely.
That you won't even care that you have gastrointestinal distress. Yeah. Okay, so open your mind and your butt.
And try to go on the side streets, back alleys. Usually the good restaurants in the basement floor or the second floor or maybe...
So the ones that are on the first floor, the prime retail
retail,
they don't have to work as hard.
No. Yeah. And if they have a, you know, huge flashy sign, that's not good.
One of the beauties about eating here is that you can take risks because people, even at the shops that aren't the greatest or something, there's still a baseline level of care about what they're doing, like a bit of pride of service that, you know, I wouldn't find, even in New York, you're not as safe taking risks sometimes. I mean, I'm always up for eating any crazy shit, but like, but just in the sense that like, even if they're not, it's not an amazing meal or something, you're still, people still care about the food, so you can fly a little bit, you know.
Yeah,
you're not gonna fall too hard.
No. And most of the cases, like, if you're open-minded, you know, try anything, then they welcome you, you know. Sometimes, like, maybe they freak out, you know.
That does happen every once in a while.
But be adventurous.
Be adventurous, and it's also, it's, you know, what they say about snakes, like, they are as scared of you as you are of them, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
right, yeah.
So when you're having interactions, especially in these hole-in-the-wall joints, know that the cooks there are feeling as anxious about the interaction as you might be. Yeah. And then you'll get through it together somehow with a smile and a willingness to eat that. And, you know, also from my experience as gaijin here in Japan, there's a sort of national sport of getting gaijin to eat, you know, like the challenging food, like, you know, Totoro, or no, what's the, Tororo. The slimy mountain yam, or like the fermented natto, where they like kind of feed you that, you know, and they like want to see the look on your face. And, you can, you know, if you just dive in and do it, you will make friends so quickly. You get like you get so many points just for trying.
Just for trying.
Even if you know they're getting a little bit of entertainment value out of it, just do it, and you get like so much respect. It's it's kind of awesome.
Welcome to our circle, kind of.
Exactly.
I mean, even for Japanese, like, you know, we need the guts to try the first, you know, thing. Like some, you know, restaurant, they don't even have like, we are doing sushi or we are doing something like, this place is so mysterious.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, this is literally, it's the home of the omakase, right?
Yeah.
Where it's we're going to give you what we want to give you. Just sit back and buckle in, you know? Yeah. Now, is there some foods that you just won't eat? So like a Japanese food, you're like, no, thank you.
I'm not a huge fan of mountain vegetables.
Oh, you know? That like, would be like the slimy.
No, some like, I like, you know, bamboo shoot, you know, I get it, but some mountain vegetables called like, how do you say English? Like, it comes like this.
Oh, the fern, the fern. Yeah, they'll put that in soups and stuff. Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of that.
Yeah, that's that is a specific taste.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. Like, what's the point? Like, mountain vegetables, like, doesn't, you know, amuse you, like, so exciting, like, wow, mountain vegetables.
And then here comes the fiddlehead.
But
so the thing that I can't do is the sea cucumber.
Sea cucumber.
That's
right.
That's a tough one.
That's a tough. Yeah.
But you're down with that. You can go right in.
I can eat. You know. I mean, I have to admit they're not, you know, the cutest creatures in this planet. You know, like, you know, so the first, you know, person, I always make a joke, like, you know, must be, you know, desperate.
Yeah, we were talking with Matt Orlando, a chef in Copenhagen, who's also just kind of wondering, that first person to eat a sea cucumber. Amazing desperation.
Yeah.
Got it. All right, well, that's good.
Yeah.
So your palate's fairly open, just don't throw some ferns at you.
Yeah.
Are the Olympics going to change things around here?
Definitely, you know, Japanese government is aiming more tourists, you know, like double game. Now 20 million people are coming, almost 30 million. And next year they are, you know, aiming 40 million. That's
insane.
That's insane.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah. But we've seen how hard, I mean, they, you know, they flew Matt and me and our, you know, director, collaborator, Kate Kunith to shoot in Tohoku to kind of just show people, like, here's northern part of Japan that where you can eat your face off from mountain to coast. And so I'm very grateful for their desire to see that story told. We also happen to, like, believe it. It's always shocked me. From the first time we made rice noodle fish and we really got to look at, like, what the travel numbers to Japan were, it's just like, this is criminal.
Yeah.
Japan is, like, it's incredibly safe.
Yep.
The food is absolutely, you know, the most delicious combination of different styles of cuisine that you can get. The people are rad. They don't pull any bullshit on you. They're just, like, very happy to see you do whatever you're doing, even if you're not doing it right.
Yeah.
There's all these amazing things about coming here. So it feels like they should be able to flip a switch.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's an aggressive number.
Yeah. I mean, Tokyo is, you know, like a huge city. Maybe has a capacity, you know, like absorbing, you know, more tourists. But even Kyoto, I saw an interesting article, like, just last couple years, the number of hotels increasing like 3 times in last couple years.
Wow.
3 times.
Yeah. Kyoto does not feel like a city that can absorb more of that.
No.
I mean, even even back, I think I was here in 2003, and we had to sleep in a linen closet one night because there were no actual bedrooms anywhere in the city. My personal Japan itinerary does not start with Kyoto.
Kyoto, right?
You know, because it's just, it is so crowded. It's gorgeous, but man.
I think, like you said, like, you know, Tohoku or Kyushu or even, you know, Hokkaido.
Yeah.
You know, mystery zone, you know, you can discover by yourself.
Yeah.
One thing about, like, mud in the world, but rice fish noodles.
The rice noodle fish.
You know, like ekiben. And, like, you know, it's a great thing about, you know.
Train food.
You know, like, each station got, you know, their original design, you know, bento box.
It is so crazy. Yeah. But, yeah, you can get these different, you know, these different, either in this station or.
Yeah.
Sometimes on the train, but they're like highly specialized, regional, based on the place either that you're leaving or where you're going to on the trail, on the rail map, and they'll give you like the freshest stuff from that place.
Yeah, or the variety, and the price is around, you know, 10 to 15, you know, usually.
Yeah, it's incredibly cheap.
Yeah.
And it's so good.
Yeah.
And it's fresh, and we've seen, you know, you go on those, like, you go to the Ekimai, you go to the train station, like, early in the morning, you'll see them bringing in the, you know, the fresh boxes that they just made, and they all need to be sold that day. Yeah. It's a wildly efficient and delicious system.
Yeah, and it's part of the, you know, like, fun of the traveling around Japan, right?
Yeah. That's, I mean, listen, I think I've made the point. I really like eating here, and Shinji really knows how to eat here. Now, how do, if people want to get in touch with you, like, how do they do it? They got to DM you on Instagram? Or?
Instagram is the one thing, but I can't check all the, you know, requests.
So you got to know somebody to know this guy at this point.
That's more likely so, you know, these days, you know.
Yeah, all right,
Yeah, I know someone, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're pre-vetted. And that's also a way that you know that they're not going to waste your time and that everything's within the circle.
Yeah, yeah. I can give, you know, again, some tips. But, my body is just one. You know?
No matter how much ramen you eat, you're still just one body.
Yeah, one stomach.
One stomach. Well, it makes it all the more a pleasure that we were able to get you here to share your wisdom. For people who don't even know a guy who knows you. And the other thing I wanted to say, which is, you know, I may be speaking out of turn here, but I know that when, you know, when Tony killed himself, Matt was here in Tokyo.
Right. Yes.
And
I heard from him.
Yeah. And that was, you know, it was super challenging for me to break the news to him and, to him to be so far away from all of us who were at least in New York together. Yep. But knowing that you were here, like, that actually made a big difference to me because, you know, we were all looking for that other person who knew Tony and and could have an understanding of what was going on.
Yeah.
So I wanted to also thank you for doing that and for being there for Matt.
No.
It's like if he's got to be in you know, halfway around the world.
Yeah, I mean. You know, of course we didn't plan anything, you know, but, you know, for me, like, I heard from Matt the news, even like unpleasant news, like, it's better than, like, you know, I saw, you know, get the news from some somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, I didn't plan this, but at that night, I booked the restaurant, which is a yakiniku, you know, barbecue restaurant, which I took Tony.
Coincidence.
Yeah, like years and years ago, you know. And we shared the meal with Tony. And a few years later, you know, like, I shared a meal with Matt and his wife and, our friends. So,
And then so at least that night you were able to...
Yeah, we're not in the mood for going out for dinner or anything, but we have to eat. We have to drink. We have to move forward. Yeah. You know?
Well, that's awesome. You know, it's hard to repay things like that. But that's the guy you are. You're fixing. Mm-hmm. You're gonna fix us all, man. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming to the airport.
And thank you for having me on your show. And please to do it again.
Maybe with more notice.
Yeah, more notice, and maybe 24 hours duration.
That's true. I am. This is literally a 3-hour layover, and then I'm going to New York. again. But yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. 3 hours in Tokyo is a hell of a lot better than no hours in Tokyo.
The Trip is hosted by me, Nathan Thornburg, produced by Roads and Kingdoms. Taffy Mukunyadze is our editor, and should we ever need one, our Little Rock, Arkansas fixer. Emily Marinoff is our producer. Music by Dan the Automator, artwork by Adele Rodriguez. Executive producers are me and Matt Goulding, also of Roads and Kingdoms. This was our second of two Tokyo episodes. Next week, we'll go to Thailand for three conversations that I'm extremely geeked for. In the first, I'm drinking Bangkok iced tea with Thai director Tom Waller, who just finished the first and only Thai-led film project about last year's gripping Chiang Rai cave rescue.
People were watching the news and their hearts were beating. It was kind of the only thing that mattered was, are those boys, have they been found? Are they out of the cave yet?
We'll meet you there.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.